Thank you very much, Rebecca. It's a real pleasure to see you all, and it's nice to be kicking off again for this year. This has been a very one of these areas that we've just found really interesting and fun to think about. It's been great comparing notes with Steve, who I'll introduce in a moment. Just to say a little bit more about where we're heading tonight, we're going to be a little bit ambitious. We're going to cover 9 different headings. We're going to try and cover them quite quickly. How does social media work? Do we craft our identity on social media, or is it a kind of a window into our soul? What is the social impulse that drives it? How might we use it for good? How does the technology, this technology and technology in general, how does technology change us? What about Facebook, the corporation? How is it related to the wider question of social media? What about ancient wisdom for the public square? What can we find to help us in this modern phenomenon? I'm going to revisit how it works again. And finally, we'll ask about whether you'd ever opt out of it. There's, as Rebecca said, the booklet lists those headings. It doesn't really, it's not exactly an outline. It just picks on some of the quotes we're going to be using. And there's a lot of things that it mentions that we won't be going into tonight, but they're really worth your looking up. The other thing I wanted to say too is we won't be visiting the issue of how Facebook and other social media complicates the matter of romance. That was something that came up in a kind of a survey that we did, which I'll be telling you about. It just seemed a bit awkward to kind of munge that into the talk tonight, but I hope that we'll get plenty of time for questions afterwards. And if you need to text us something about your romance life, then please do, and we'll see what we can do for you. There's a couple of books that we found pretty interesting and helpful. This one by Jesse Rice, a UK thinker, The Church of Facebook, How the Hyperconnected Are Redefining Community, was quite interesting and useful. It has some flaws. There's bits of it that I don't entirely agree with, but nonetheless, it's a very, very readable book with lots of clever little historical excursies, and I kind of read it just on a Sunday afternoon. It's that easy. And it also quite insightful on a number of different issues. I haven't read this one myself. Tim Challey's The Next Story, Life and Faith After the Digital Explosion, but in a moment I might ask Steve to say something about that. In fact, coming up now, Steve, let's meet you. These are the reasons why people don't have a Facebook account. Basically, the red people just really I have no idea how to use it, seriously. That's the sort of main reason. Is that what you find, mate? Do you find a lot of people just haven't got a clue about this area? Is this something that's brand new to people?
I think so. There's probably different groups of people now. Facebook has been able to shape itself in such a way that it's becoming increasingly difficult not to use it. Mm. So even those who have no idea how to use the technology are discovering that they need to get on board if they're going to stay in touch with people and see those baby photos and get invited to those events. So probably that number of people is shrinking as time goes on.
Yeah, yeah. What initially attracted you to this technology and when?
Well, it's a long story, which I'll cut short by saying that I've always been in marketing. I've loved communications. I was asked to develop a website for the organisation that I was working for at the time, and I didn't really want to do it, but ended up doing it anyway. And then I discovered this amazing world of online communication and all the opportunities that involved. I quit that job, moved to Sydney, started MTS, and have had the great opportunity at the church that I did MTS at to continue to explore communication, marketing and social media and how all of these technologies and strategies might be used to further the gospel of Jesus.
So MTS is Ministry Training Suite. So this is...
Yeah, that's right.
And your... Steve's got a really interesting and productive website called Communicate Jesus. Just tell us something about that, mate. How long has that been going? What do you do on that?
Yeah, so I started this in 2009. And really it was a way... Look, I've got a terrible memory. And so I started, when I started out in full-time ministry, to start to document some of the lessons that I was learning about communication and marketing and the church and how all these things intersect. And I started to keep this website as a way of remembering these things so I could reference back to them. And then I thought, oh, there's probably some other people in other churches who might benefit from the thinking that I've been doing on this topic. And then it's kind of grown since then. So we're kind of 800 posts strong now, and just thinking about creativity and technology and social media and marketing, and how the technology that we have got in this world that we're living now, again, might be used to further the kingdom.
It's been a really interesting... I found it a great website just to become familiar with, because for every sort of five posts Steve has that are really creative about how to use this technology, there'll be another one that's just a little bit more reserved, sort of maybe, you know, warning us a little bit about how it can go wrong. So it's not... It's quite rounded, I think. That's you wouldn't disagree with that, would you? Next little slide here, I don't know if this is kind of a joke. If you're into social media, you'll kind of get it. Otherwise, you'll need to explain it to us, Steve. What are these? How significant is each one? Are there others on this list that people should know about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great graphic that's out there of that is, I guess, less playful than this one, that talks about all of the channels that social media provides. And it's just huge. Every day, another social media channel arrives on the scene. Really, these social media networks are simply opportunities for people to connect with other people. The key way that media has changed just in the last few years is that previously the conversation was dominated by a few media outlets who started pushing their content out, and we could read it and then discuss it with other people offline. Now we have the opportunity for this conversation to be two-way. And it's having all kinds of implications for journalism and for political systems, as the ability for people to communicate has changed, and engagement is now far easier than it ever has been before. In this list of social media channels, and it's a great description of what's going on, really we've got the order around a little bit the wrong way. Facebook would be at the top, YouTube would be second, and then you've probably got LinkedIn and Twitter coming in underneath that. Really, what each of these different social media channels do is allow people different ways of communicating about different types of topics. And the reason why Facebook is the biggest, with I think it's now 850 million users around the world, it seems to go up by a couple of million every day, is because it's by far the most general channel for people to communicate on.
I always think of Facebook as like the 800-pound gorilla on the block. Do you reckon that's right? I mean, is it by far the most significant of these channels?
Yeah, I mean, Facebook's had this great strategy where they've been able to make people who aren't on Facebook feel inadequate and completely disconnected if you're not on that channel. So you want to find out what someone's had a baby? That was on Facebook. Oh. Yeah, you wanted to find out about the event that's going on? Well, that's on Facebook. And so there was a time when people may have resisted it, but that wall of resistance has slowly been broken down by Facebook. And that's their goal. They want to connect the whole world, and they're doing a great job of that by integrating their system with websites around the world, so you can log in with your Facebook account. Their strategy is rolling out, and they're still considering how they're going to make money off this platform, but primarily it's about taking our information and selling it on to other people. And there's pros and cons to that, which we'll discuss later on.
So if we kind of keep spiralling back into Facebook, in a sense that's fair enough, isn't it? Because we can't avoid that. I want to sort of open up this question now of whether... what goes on when we use social media? Are people sort of crafting a projection of themselves, or are they always seeing their real self? I'm just sort of interested in your impressions on this. What do you reckon is going on when people do their status updates, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, one question for us all to consider is, what was the thinking that went through our minds when we updated a photo for our profile? I'm yet to see someone who deliberately uploads an ugly photo of themselves onto Facebook. We have a process of thinking that goes through our minds when we think, I want people to like this. No one wants to project an image of themselves that is unlikable, and that is true to the human heart. Our great desire is to be liked and to be affirmed by other people. There's some great kind of parodies online about the categorising the different types of Facebook profile pictures. You know, the person who's sitting in their bedroom, kind of, they've obviously got their camera and they've kind of taken this shot straight up their nostrils, but it was the best shot they could do at the time and they just had to get it up there. Everyone is crafting this image, and the image flows down from the photo that we use for our personal profile right down to the detailed crafting of each post that we upload, every comment, every witty remark about the most banal of everyday topics. And I think this, again, flows back to our heart and what it is that we want from other people. Because there's so many things, when we reflect on our own experience on Facebook and other social media networks, about that are going through our minds as we consider what kinds of content we're going to create. Will other people like this? Will people think better of me? No one ever posts anything that will make others think worse of them. Will other people sympathise with this? Does this look like I have a life that is far better than the one I actually have? Will people want to spend more time with me? There's so many questions, but a lot of those questions, on my reflection, come back to me. What will people think about me? And I guess that's one of the troubling things, and one of the things that I keep reflecting on in my own heart is, how much does this media, my use of this media, come back to me constantly thinking about me rather than me thinking about God and others?
Do you reckon is there a particular kind of internet vibe that also kind of corrals us and pushes us, that kind of inflames that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, so YouTube is one of the fastest growing websites out there, and I can't remember, I mean, it changes again every day, how many millions of hours of video content are uploaded each day. But YouTube's big tagline is broadcast yourself. And that's social media's big tagline: broadcast yourself, create yourself, reinvent yourself. There's this great image, I don't know if we've got it in the slides, depicting kind of Facebook, and it says my Facebook self. And it's got this guy with his cap kind of back, his shirt undone, he's on a skateboard, he's looking incredible. And then on the other side it says my real self, and it's this kind of overweight slob sitting on the couch watching TV. And again, it just kind of reflects the what social media has created us to do, an image of ourselves that may or may not represent who we really are. And by providing us with so many different channels, we're able to craft very carefully this image that we would like to portray.
Thanks. I was just going to read some things that came back from a little survey that we did. So grab a seat and we'll call you up again later. That really came out. We used, you know, Facebook, of course, and other social media to just ask people their reactions to questions like this. This was something written by a student. I often find myself writing status updates in my head throughout the day. They get further and further refined until I'm sure they are the perfect blend of wit and intelligence, and then get posted. It's all about presenting a me that I'm sure people will like. The problem is, it isn't actually an accurate representation of who I am. I don't have a natural razor-sharp wit. I'm sure that if some of my Facebook acquaintances caught up with me in real life, they'd be kind of disappointed. And if it's true for me, I'm sure that is true for heaps of other people. I really appreciated their honesty. This is from a pastor. Really great insight, I thought. The mouth speaks, or the status is updated with, what the heart is full of, quoting Jesus from Luke chapter 6. That is, I can usually tell what's most important for someone, or what or who they treasure, by reading their posts for about a month. Now, he goes on and says, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not exact, and I'm not trying to just kind of seize on people. I might need to go and have a chat with them. But I think it's a really interesting insight. There was another respondent who said, it just exposes me to the temptation to create a shrine to myself and also to present a not overly accurate picture of who I am. There's actually a bit of a paradox here when you think about it. Are we seeing a carefully crafted act of self-promotion, or are we seeing self-revelation? Are we seeing a kind of a window to our soul that is impossible to hide? Now, it seems to me that paradox may be no different than what we battle with every day face to face, because each of us are a funny mix of mask and leakage, if I can put it like that. We mask, showing what we want to say about ourselves, but also this leakage, where a lot of our character is just obvious to others, even if it's not evident to ourselves. But in these responses, there was still this general sense, I think Steve's brought it out really well, is this general sense that social media somehow kind of amplifies both, and amplifies the mask and the leakage. Now, one tweeter heard the direction of our conversation, was worried that we were making it all only ever bad, and said there's a danger, he or she said, in demonising status updates and tweets as attention-seeking. And absolutely, I agree, there are good uses of these technologies. We're going to return to those below, in the section below, but how do we make a helpful and truthful projection of ourselves versus an ideal image, or versus a showcase of ourselves at our worst? And that book by Rice has a good start, I think. Take a look at your profile, he says, the pictures that you've posted, the information that you've shared. Does the content reflect your God-given nature? Is it true to what you really see? If you're funny, be funny. If you're artistic, be artistic. If you're neither, just be you. Are you being you in the way you interact with your Facebook friends? I'm going to tell you what I think of that quote in a minute, but Steve, I'll just hand back to you. What do you reckon about that kind of advice?
I've read this book, and yeah, it's a really good book, but my first thought when I read this is, what if you are desperately single? How is that kind of reflected in your Facebook update? You know, what if you're just a person who's rude and just kind of speaks kind of, you know, without thinking? You know, how is that reflected in your social update? So the challenge for us is sometimes to not be us, in a sense, to restrict what we say, because it's actually beneficial for others. And there's a step beyond this, I think, of, well, how are we, and, you know, I'm keen to explore this some more, how are we to be as Christians, to use this to God's glory, when sometimes who we are is exactly who we don't need to be on these channels? You know, we can be very self-centered. I can be very opinionated. Social media doesn't need me to be even more opinionated. It provides you with just yet another channel to do just that. So I'm wary of instructions for us to be just more like who we are, even when I can sense where the author was going with that.
That really dovetails with, I think, where we are heading tonight, because I think the Bible says, you know, it's a good start to be truthful, but there's sometimes the me that I carry into any venue is always under interrogation and change, ultimately, in comparison with and in the company of and with the help of Jesus Christ. So we'll talk about that when we get to the section on ancient wisdom. But I thought it might be interesting just to think about what's driving this. I mean, Steve's told us, you know, it's just been this huge increase in all the social media, and Facebook's the one we keep talking about, 850 million. If you add in all the others, there must be billions of people involved. What's the hit? Why has this technology been so effective? Why has it taken off so much? You tell me. Let's throw that open for a bit. What are your thoughts? Has anyone got any views on what's so interesting about this to people? Right, okay, so people like the fact that here's a platform where they all get a bit of a say, really, about what goes on. Yep, that's absolutely right.
But at the same time, they can control who gets it.
So you've got a lot of control. That's one of the things that comes out in Rice's book. There's a huge amount of, we feel at least, at first, there's a great deal of control that's given to us. That's right. Any other thoughts?
It's convenient to use this.
It's just really great, isn't it, to be able to just check in on friends and not have to do a lot, go to a lot of effort to do it. That's absolutely right. Yep. Yeah, what else? So there's just a real buzz to it. There's this sense that you're just part of something that's happening right now, and it's hard to, you know, it's kind of, you know, a four-hour-old status update's kind of boring, isn't it? There's a great line in, again, in Rice's book where he talks about what he calls our invisible entourage, that sort of crowd of people that follow us everywhere, watching what we do. And it's a psychology thing, you know, we all have this from little kids, really, this imagination of what will other people think, but it, like, really heightens this sense of the invisible entourage, absolutely. That's right, yeah, if there's something that's boring, you can tune out, or you can just pass it by, or it's just a lot less effort, in a sense, isn't it, than a lot of the hassle of social relationships. So it's become a socially acceptable way to just talk about yourself a lot, isn't it, yeah. And this is, the deep origins of Facebook were a hotness contest. It began as you know, random photos had come up and you would rate them according to who's the hottest. So it's got sort of competitiveness built into its DNA. So not only is it a bit more multimedia than a letter, there's just so much stimulus in that, isn't there? It's actually pretty rare for someone to kind of come after you, isn't it? Maybe not that rare, but fairly rare. Yeah, right, absolutely. It sort of lubricates our social interaction. The one thing that, they're all great comments, the one thing they all have in common, It's sort of so obvious, it's so deep at the root of all of those things, we almost miss it because it's so basic, is it's just we are hugely social beings, right? This is what it is to be a human being. Humans aren't individuals, really. We can't stand being alone. We're absolutely, we're just really so motivated by social relationship. It's like this. This is a cat eating some catnip. Cats can't resist catnip. They kind of just go after it and go nuts. And I've heard human social connection described as catnip for humans. That's what we're like. This is I heard that in the context of how hard it is to change our smartphone behaviour when we're in cars, because you know the authorities are doing everything they can to get this out of my hand when I'm in a car, but you know. You and I won't, because when that little buzz happens, we have to see who's connecting with us. We just can't stop ourselves. Catnip for humans. We just can't resist this little pleasure hit when someone takes notice of us. And the whole of social media is really picking up on our social being. And again, there's some quotes in the booklet about from Rice about this. This is one of the young men who responded to us. I check it now even without thinking. When I wake up, I saddle up to the computer, and when I sleep, I check in on my phone as I lie in bed. It's only a minute or two, but the fact is that I don't even really think about it anymore. It's just part of my life. It's, I think, you know, some of you will relate to that. It just gives us that social connection that we crave. It's on tap 24/7 if we want it. But I want to suggest, too, that it can amplify our social failings, because we've got this social nature, but it has this dark side and can amplify this dark side, too. People in the Bible are very skilled at offering summary lists of what we are like together when we're at our worst. Here are just two parts of two lists. Jesus talks about greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. Apostle Paul talks about quarrelling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambitions, slander, gossip, arrogance. All of those words can't happen unless you're with another person. They're all social problems. They're all social foul-ups. And it seems to me that social media certainly has the capacity to amplify many of these failings. A middle-aged man who responded to us said, the style of social media info can be very abusive and dismissive of people, rather than trying to engage and relate to people with different views. My 19-year-old son mentioned that people can be more dogmatic as a result. That's a bit of an understatement. The level of anonymity is regularly unhelpful. And I think he probably had in mind those stupid comment forums at the end of newspaper articles, actually, with that comment. Long for the day when they're going to go away. Just for myself, let me pick up on the jealousy and the greed mentioned here. I find that if I'm idly trolling through a news feed or a photo album, within a few minutes, I just envy other people's lives. I mean, have you been there? I just feel like I have the worst life in the world. I see their smiling friends and their wealth and their holidays and so on. It just brings out the worst in me. Now, that's rarely the fault of the person doing the posting. And I've heard this same story from others. It hits you where you're at your weakest. If you long for children, you envy the pretty children of others. If you're single, you long to be in a relationship. If you're married, you wish you had the freedom that some well-off single partying person on Facebook has. And the platform can really kind of rub our noses into what we don't have. As one young woman put it to us, she said, Facebook can create a greater sense of isolation or loneliness, that feeling of being alone in a crowded room. If others are kind of constantly checking in at dinners with their friends, people who aren't and are on the outer can just feel hurt that they weren't invited. They long to be part of that circle. And we also heard from people who were at a very low place emotionally and mentally, for whom social media, something about it just triggered actually very, very dangerous levels of despair for them. Of course, that's all about what we bring to it, isn't it? That's not necessarily, you know, Facebook's fault or anything like that. Because something similar happens to those not on Facebook. This is pretty funny. Not being on allows me to envy being in on who's saying what on Facebook. I'm a little out of the loop. Not being on, he's not a member of Facebook, has hindered being able to maintain late-level relationships and could have hindered being able to develop deeper-level relations. It's doubtlessly hindered me from knowing what many people really think about various things too. So it's really complex, isn't it? This catnip effect, this social catnip, it kind of draws us in and it also kind of fans the worst side of our social nature. I want to throw to Steve again and just ask him what mistakes and maybe, you know, foul-ups, sins, stuff-ups have you seen? in social media.
Until I became full-time at a church last year, I was working in a social media consultancy, and our job was to manage the social media campaigns for different companies, Canon and NRMA, and part of that was to, I guess, monitor what people were kind of saying about each of those companies, and part of that was to learn from the lessons of what lots of other companies were doing and to avoid some of those mistakes. I think, though, there's been a number of big mistakes. So we've seen kind of Qantas's kind of luxury Qantas experience hashtag go terribly wrong, all happening at the same time, encouraging people to talk about the benefits of flying with Qantas at the same time as Qantas was being dismantled by the unions. There are the classic examples of people like the comedian Catherine Deveny making those terrible comments about Bindi Irwin at the Logies last year. But I think as we scale back from the corporate to the famous and then down to us as individuals, some of those risks of social media again come back much closer to the heart. So there's a great quote from John Piper where he says, one of the great purposes of Twitter and Facebook on the last day will be to reveal that our prayerlessness was not due to a lack of time. It's great, isn't it? Now, John Piper is great at using Facebook and Twitter. He's a guy who's kind of really worked out how to redeem this technology and use it for the glory of God. But we, I think, as Christians, and many of us here tonight will be Christians, have got this great urgency in our mission and a great God who desires for us to pray to him and to connect with him and to relate closely with him, and yet so much of our time is wasted in kind of flippant interactions with other people. So I think that's one of the challenges for us. The second challenge that I've really been reflecting on recently is our inadvertent insensitivity to other people. So, for example, so many of my friends, it seems at the moment, are having kind of babies, and post so many photos of their babies on Facebook. Now, there are people who I know who aren't able to have children. And for these people, when those photos go up, it's like I've wandered round to Andrew's place knowing that Andrew can't have kids and said, look at my amazing life with my amazing children. Now, we would never do that in a normal situation, because I would be sensitive. I mean, Andrew's, a bad example here, but you know, we would be sensitive of the people that we are communicating with and their particular struggles and sensitivities. And yet, somehow, because we are hidden behind the veil of the computer or the mobile phone, we become strangely insensitive to the impact that our words, our updates, our photos might have on others. Now, in one sense, it's not kind of my fault, but in another sense, as a Christian, this is my responsibility. My responsibility is to love others. And I fear that one of the risks for us is to be, again, so self-centred that we fail to consider how our words and our actions might impact on others. And that is one of the great kind of Christian pursuits, is to love not ourselves but others and God.
I think that's really insightful. So I like your concept of Piper redeeming it, which kind of leads nicely to our next point. The using it for good is the right question, in a sense. This is I'm going to go on and say there's a bigger question than just how to use it for good, but it's the right question to, in a sense, begin with. With any new technology, our usual way to handle it is go, okay, how are we going to use it for good? So just before I throw back to Steve, maybe just if you came with someone tonight, just turn and maybe share an example of where you've seen any social media being used really well by someone in a way that was positive and constructive. Just give that a go if you want to with someone that you came with tonight.
This is how do we redeem social media for good? What are your reflections? We've seen, and that's a perfect example, though, of the power of what can be achieved. So the government can shut down lots of different channels. They can block the roads, but they're not going to shut down those communication channels. In some cases, they did, but it's very risky for them when their whole kind of tourism sector is reliant on keeping the internet alive. So there's a number of different benefits, and look, I've, you know, it's easy, as Andrew said, to kind of harp on a little bit about the risks. I think one of the big things that we as Christians need to be doing is to be considerate of how the technology impacts us. There's a couple of guys who've written about this, Marshall McLuhan and Neil Postman, are great guys to look up, as well as Tim Challis in his book, The Next Story, which Andrew mentioned at the start. But there's so many good opportunities, and I think this is a real something really positive for us to explore as we consider how this media can be used again for the glory of God. One of the great desires that I have is to create a video that succinctly explains in, say, 2 minutes, the gospel. And because video is so popular, and because people are able to access video on any device that they have, their computer or their phone, if we could create a video as Christians that explained the gospel, that was something we would actually be comfortable in sharing with our friends, there is a really powerful opportunity for the gospel to go out to millions of people. There was an agency, an ad agency in Spain, I think, who last year created a video for The Christmas Story. They weren't even Christians, and they explained in an animated video what The Christmas Story was all about, and it wasn't particularly Christian, but it was more than, I guess, what a lot of Christians were doing at Christmas time. That went out to, I think, 6 million people who saw that at Christmas time. Now, the opportunity, because I share something and then you share what I shared and then those people who saw that shared and so on, to get out messages to a large number of people, what we call the viral effect, is phenomenal. But I think it comes back on the micro level to us considering, again, how can I love others and how can I love God and advance his name? And this is, I think, one of the great opportunities that we have that we haven't really explored. Our great temptation of social media is to think, how can I advance my name? One of the challenges that was mentioned before was, well, do we keep, you know, someone said to me this at a conference a couple of months ago, what do I do about the Christians in my church who are always posting Bible verse updates? And I said, I haven't seen any of those people before. I think they're fewer and further between. I think one of the great challenges for Christians is to actually be real about their faith, which doesn't involve, I agree, doesn't involve posting an endless stream of Bible verses, but does involve sharing the highs and lows of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Does involve not just talking about the cafe that you went to and the new dog that you got and what you're up to this weekend, but sharing what it means to be a follower. It's a joy today because God created this new day, and I'm glad to be a part of it. Someone that, you know, one of my friends on Facebook said that today, great post. Just reminding people, hey, this is God's day. He made it, and it's mine to enjoy. I'm curious that so many people, myself included, might check in to different venues. You know, just checking into Tetsuya's tonight. Well, doesn't that make me look like a bit of a gourmet connoisseur? But how many people would check in to church? Now, just imagine there's, you know, 50 people at your congregation on a Sunday night, and all of us check in to our particular church service. Then all of those people who are friends with you on Facebook would then discover, oh, Craig goes to such and such a church. I didn't even know Craig went to church. I've been thinking about coming to church. I've got some questions about the Christian faith. Maybe I'll chat to Craig. You can see the impact that it has about being real about our faith and about considering in advance some of the things that we might share and the power that has. There was a great story of a girl at my church who didn't, this wasn't even on Facebook. She had been very reluctant to tell her friends that she was, her colleagues, that she was going on the church camp that weekend. Finally, somehow they bled it out of her that she was in fact going away, not just with friends, but on the church camp. This colleague then asked, oh, I didn't realise that you went to church. I'd love to come to church with you. I've always wanted to go. Do you think I could come along? Simply by putting it out there that she was a Christian, she went to church, she was able to invite a friend along. The opportunities are there, but we need to be more thoughtful, I think, on the whole, about how we authentically live as Christians offline and online.
Yeah, it's just really important to be having that kind of conversation about how to use it well. I want to pan the camera back a little bit now and ask how the technology itself might be changing us. Because with any new technology, it's not quite sufficient simply to ask, simply to try using it for good. We have to dig deeper. And I've been helped in this by this really, I won't lie to you, extremely hard book by a fellow called Brian Brock. And Steve mentioned Neil Postman, and there's a link to a really quick little article by him in the booklet. Every technology presents itself to us as an improvement, a step upward on the ladder of progress, another great leap towards perfection. And that's not actually true, though, because every technology has winners and losers. Consider, firstly, the losers. This is someone who very perceptively said, the subtext is that you have to have a home computer or an iPhone to be part of a church community. Event invitations can sometimes be sent purely via Facebook. Therefore, if you're not on Facebook, you're not invited. I fear for those in our churches who don't have easy access to expensive technology. And it may already be feeling a sense of exclusion for other reasons. In other words, this technology cuts out a lot of people. The aged, those who can't afford a computer, or those who don't have access, the sick, the very young, some with intellectual disabilities, and so on. For these people, it's anti-social media. Also, every technology changes what we think our humanity needs. That is, we get hoodwinked about where reality lies. This is one of our respondents. What I hate is all the time and energy devoted. How all the time and energy devoted to it takes my gaze off my own reality. I have plenty of people in this world to get to know, and yet my gaze is taken off the immediate reality of my life, the intangible reality of my life, connections from long ago and friends I do not see in my street, my cafe, or my workplace. This man is noticing the way technology is not better than face-to-face communication, despite the way it tries to convince us that it is. I have another friend who works in radio. He relates to people via media all of his life, which is kind of a necessary handicap over vast distances, and he's a bit mystified why it is we all now think that social media, that is, social relationships mediated through a technological interface, is better than unmediated face-to-face relationships. But this technology has a way of hoodwinking us into thinking that it is somehow superior to the real thing. It's important to realise, too, that this technology is no mindless machine. Every technology has human intentions embedded in it. It's soaked in human plans and purposes, and few more so than Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg has made it very clear that he wants your entire internet experience to become organised around Facebook, and the company's business model is to sell you on as part of an audience to advertisers. Now, I don't want to condemn that here tonight. There may be many reasons to participate in that kind of arrangement, but I do want us to be aware of what we're becoming a part of. The articles listed in the booklet will help you to pursue that further. There's a scene in the book of Revelation where it's the end of history as we know it, and merchant activity as we know it is over. And it speaks of merchants weeping and mourning that nobody buys their cargoes anymore. And it lists these cargoes. It talks about gold and silver and precious stones and pearls, fine linen, purple, silk and scarlet cloth, every sort of citron wood, not sure what that is, and articles of every kind made of ivory, costly wood, bronze, iron and marble, cargoes of cinnamon and spice, of incense, myrrh and frankincense, of wine and olive oil, of fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and carriages, oh, and the bodies and souls of men. It's a long and fairly business-like inventory, isn't it? But this last phrase comes as a bit of a shock, people's bodies and souls. And it was probably talking about slavery back in the day, and there's plenty of people trafficking today that we could easily point to. But I don't think it does any harm to notice that merchants are as interested in our body and soul as is Jesus himself, although without the same guarantees that they'll take care of it like he will. So I just want to urge you to know what you're a part of. Think about the critiques of it. There's a proverb in the Bible that says, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord made them both. And I think that just means you've got them, so use them. Don't glide along as if thinking about what you're a part of is someone else's job. Leads me neatly to the book of Proverbs. It's a classic part of the Bible for showing us who to be in public space. It's so much about how you'll carry yourself in social contexts. And I'm really quite fascinated by how this 3,000 or 4,000-year-old literature really moderates who we might be on the internet. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only wants to show off his opinions. A shrewd person conceals knowledge, but a foolish heart publicises stupidity. How are your comments looking lately? It is honourable for a man to resolve a dispute, but any fool can get himself into a quarrel, either making flames or putting them out. One that has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. What sort of friends are they really? The pastor who responded to us said, quite honestly, it distances me, this technology, unwittingly, from my family because of the wastage of my time. One of the young men who responded said, it takes my gaze off my own reality. He said he'd been studying Proverbs recently and shocked to discover that the basic problem for the fool is not laziness, but rather a refusal to deal with reality. A middle-aged man came back to us and said, I know of many people who spend their evenings on it and wreck their marriages and their families and spend time on it when they are with their real life friends. Which reminded me of this proverb, wisdom is the focus of the perceptive, but a fool's eyes roam to the ends of the earth. Are you living in fantasy or reality in your use of this media? This is not the only part of the Bible that can shape our internet selves. We've reproduced a little bit from Rice's book where he talks about Jesus as being intentional, humble and authentic towards the woman at the well, and goes on to explore what it would look like for us to be like that on the internet. But actually, it's this part of the book that makes me crankiest, because his ironic title, The Church of Facebook, leads me to expect that he'll say something about Jesus' church, but he just doesn't. Because Jesus doesn't just come to us and say, I am your guru, copy me. And he knows that we just can't, that's not enough for us. So he gathers, he rescues us, puts us together in churches and says, come together with my people and relearn there how to be social. One of our respondents said, I think it's important not to let it replace meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, and that we use it to spur one another on to love and good deeds. She's quoting part of the Bible. It just urges us to keep meeting together. Because you see, church solves several problems that social media cannot. Firstly, it gathers us. It gathers us in physical proximity. We have to deal with people with all of their little crazy little physical nuances. You might have actually even found it a little hard to come here tonight. Whenever we do a CCL, people say, oh, yeah, it's going to be on the internet. And we kind of deliberately make it not quite so easy to get out on the internet. Oh, it takes us a few months. We just take our time because we want you to meet and be together because it's a little harder, but it's worth it. And the way it is with church is that Jesus wants them to become places where the benefits outweigh the risks of personal relationship and where we learn how to relate properly again for real. So we're trained there in how to relate properly. Someone once called it the hospital for sinners, churches, because it's the place where we learn how to treat others as precious and ourselves as servants. And that's a pretty strange thing to do for a human being. And so finally, it includes everyone. It, at its best, each church is a place that is open to all comers, whether or not they have the technology and the skill to use it. When you go to a church, your way of being social is reconstructed. There's an English thinker, Oliver O'Donovan, who says it's a high achievement to define society in terms of place rather than blood relationship, language, economic practice, or whatever. What he means is we humans invent all sorts of ways to gather ourselves together, all sorts of ways of banding together, but we just forget that everybody in one place is as precious as each other. And it's kind of a miracle when we see the world like that. And church, he reckons, has had a lot to do with helping us see the world that way. It's not that Facebook has eroded that. It goes back a long way. Email eroded it when I preferred to talk to the guy in the office next door. Before that, it was television, which kind of scratched my social itch as I imagined I was part of someone else's stories. Before that, it was air conditioners. Can you believe it? Says Rice, because it took us off our porches in the cool of the evening, stopped us talking to each other. Before that, cars and phones and fast travel. They enabled relationships that were previously impossible over distance while taking us away from the people next to us. And even in the New Testament, they had technology in the form of letters, but by which to relate across distance, and they would still urge each other to meet together, to do physical proximity, because there's no substitute for that in the way God has ordered his world. I've got a little bit to say about this in in my book, three chapters that just talk about... people always knock me for mentioning my book because, you know, it's self-promoting, isn't it? I'm against that. But I really want you to have a look at the bits on it about, it, about how church forms us and changes us. So given all that, how does it work again? A few suggestions. Firstly, Rice says, how about just don't worry, don't use it when you get up and when you go to bed. Use that time to tune into reality, how you're really feeling, what's actually going on for you, what's making you anxious, what's making you happy. Use it to tune into the reality of your personal relationships and your relationship with God, whether they're things to be thankful for or yearnings to cry out for Him, to Him. Practice mindful and authentic Facebooking, he calls it. A hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord made them both. Watch and learn what you're doing there. Steve said in conversation, a very good idea, what would it look like to go through your posts for the last month, the last year, and just be honest and kind of interrogate what message you're sending about yourself to the world. Rice says an interesting one, which I'll make an addition to. Adopt one or two Facebook friends a month, he says. Just focus on them, one or two people, getting to know them, what they're interested in, sending them the odd message. Rice does not make the critical addition. I reckon just do that with someone of the same gender or into kind of stalking territory. But it's not a bad idea. Just the idea of just really taking interest in one or two rather than a whole flood of people. A few points that I'd add. Facebook's got this little known thing that they introduced in response to Google Plus, because Google Plus had one and only one selling point, really, which was, oh, should I have said that on air? Anyway, the fact that you could put people in controllable, manageable pools. And Facebook replied like the next day with this thing called Lists. And I use these a lot now. They enable me to just step out of the crazy torrent of the news feed, and I can look at people in pools. I can look at my family. I can look at the feed from my close friends. I can look at the feed from folks at work, stuff like that. And it just enables me to settle my experience of it a bit. You've got to self-protect a little bit from envy. Just don't go there if you're feeling fragile. And use the Lists tool to just look at the people that you can trust who aren't going to rev you up, who aren't going to make you crazy. Consider somebody made the point of how much really useful social and political and missional activism there is on Facebook. Use it to tap into people who are other person-centred and help them to remind you how big God's world is. And finally, don't practice self-deception. Your friends are actually just an audience. You're getting up on a stage when you post things. It's a stage where most people are actually looking somewhere else anyway. Your friends are not an invisible entourage who just hang off every word. Yet, paradoxically, your posts remain public and searchable and are scarily forever. So don't practice self-deception. Finally, the Amish option. Have you ever thought about deactivating your Facebook account? Every time I raise this with someone, everyone says, yes, but I'm scared to leave. and that's exactly what I'm told we want. I call opting out the Amish option after reading something by a guy called Howard Rheingold, who visited Amish communities in the US, and these are a strand of Christian believers who famously avoid a lot of technology, but not all. They adopt some, just not all. So what's going on there? He wanted to understand their adoption of some technologies as opposed to others, and he was particularly intrigued to find a limited use of telephones, and especially, you know, cell phones. This is going back, beginning of this, back around 2000. So cell phones, but also they'd already adopted, you know, landlines, but they'd often be situated in a shanty, like in a kind of an outhouse in a meadow shared by three families. And he was like, well, what's the point of that? Why do you do that? If you accept telephones, why don't you just have them in your house? And here's the answer from the Amish man. We don't want to be the kind of people who will interrupt a conversation at home to answer a telephone. It's not just how you use technology that concerns us. We're concerned about what kind of person you become when you use it. I just really like that perspective, that they're interrogating what the technology is going to do to them. Among our respondents, one said, I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook. I'm on it very regularly, every 3 months. I have a moment of inspiration where I consider leaving it, sighing out and moving on, but it's just that need to be connected that reels him back in. But then there was another woman who told us about a friend who recently deleted her account. She found that Facebook was consuming her time and her headspace, holding her back from relaxing and focusing on people in our immediate lives. Yet she herself remained a bit worried about missing news of babies and engagements. Anyway, so I guess my point is it's just really helpful. It's an area of Christian freedom. You can stay connected to Facebook. That's not a problem. We're not telling you to stop. But it is an area of freedom to not be connected to. And it's really just worth asking the question, I guess, whether that's an option for you. Steve, would you ever deactivate your Facebook account? Would you ever contemplate that?
I've actually really been seriously considering that in the last couple of months. There's been a lot of talk from Facebook recently about, they're going to have their public launch. They've got their IPO in the process at the moment. But also there's more and more that we're discovering about Facebook. For example, when you leave and when you log out, cookies, your activity on other websites is tracked. Unless you specifically block that, they will continue to absorb that information from other websites, not just from Facebook. And that's concerning. You know, Facebook's great goal, again, is to gather as much information about you as it can. Facebook has promised that it will never delete any information about you. It's Google's kind of same promise. Facebook owns everything that you put up there. If Facebook wanted to, it could take any of the photos you've ever posted and put it up at Times Square or on George Street and do whatever it wanted with it. That's their property now because you put it up there. I think there's a, I'm a massive kind of fan of social media. Twitter is really my arena of choice because one of its great benefits is the ability for me to connect with lots of people who aren't in Australia and who aren't interested in the same things that I am. And it's a phenomenally useful resource. And more people I talk to have share the same thoughts. But my, I guess, great concern is that we shouldn't rely on the current benevolence of an organisation with all of our information. When everything is kept, we need to be careful about what the implications for that might be. The head of Google in Australia recently said he predicts that children and teenagers now in the future will need to change their names because of the information that will be available about their lives as they've grown up, and it will be too incriminating for them in the future to continue to go by that same name. I think just there's a greater level of thoughtfulness that is required for our interaction. But again, there's great opportunity for us to do good. And this is where I feel like, again, we can be more considered, serving one another. In humility, consider others better than yourselves. Consider how might this technology that has connected us so well to so many different people be used to further God's name and the good of others, to make comments that really build other people up, to share posts that are greatly encouraging, to a friend that you know is struggling with depression, share with them a link that you've just discovered about how you can trust God even in this dark time. I've got connections with, and I wouldn't call everyone who I'm friends with on Facebook my friend, but people that I have met over many years in many different situations who I'm able to engage with on many different topics. A lady who I know who is very anti-Christianity is somehow quite willing to engage with me on Christian topics on Facebook when we wouldn't ever have been able to do that face-to-face. It's provided her with security for us to have that conversation that wasn't available. That's really positive. It's positive for us to share and to encourage and to build up. A lot of us are friends with, our pastors on Facebook. Imagine if all of us, just on a Sunday night, just sent a message to the pastor and said, just love your ministry to us. Love it how you put in 20 hours each week to prepare that sermon. Very few pastors, I feel, really get much encouragement throughout the week. But what a phenomenal encouragement, that would be. As a church, we're considering how we can continue to further that by just sharing encouraging quotes and Bible verses to spur us on throughout the week. So the opportunities are huge.
Thank you very much.